The Super Talk Mississippi. Mississippi at supertalk.fm.
This really burns my cannoli.
The Gallo Radio Show on Super Talk Mississippi, the Super Talk app, and at supertalk.fm.
Welcome back, final hour, and all Muckety Mucks appearing on today's program. Do so on the Trustmark VIP Gallo guest line, and also on the supertalk.fm/watch TV high definition, where Dr. Bill Grantham is appearing live and in living color with his green Oxford golf shirt on, which means as soon as this is over, he's probably heading out to play golf.
But that would be Steve Azar, not the doctor.
Well, it could be both of them.
I wish I were so lucky.
Yeah, we don't know. He may be playing together for all we know. How are you doing, Doc? It's good to see you.
I'm doing well, Paul. Thank you. Thanks for allowing me to be on this morning.
Certainly, and I got a lot of questions for you. I want to read this, though. This was in yesterday's Stack. And there is optimism out there in the medical field. Scientists have also discovered an antibody which prevents the coronavirus from infecting human cells in groundbreaking research, which could lead to the development of new treatments building on the research of SARS. The scientists in the Netherlands, as well as Erasmus Medical Center and a couple of others, have identified a potential method of neutralizing the COVID-19. They've discovered that an antibody which prevents the SARS virus from infecting human cells could also block the novel coronavirus from infecting human cells too. And it's showing some good promise there. So a lot of research is going on.
Well, you know, in the face of a pandemic or a crisis, there's oftentimes great research, great efforts that go through, and we've seen that with this, that lead to wonderful discoveries. And we're hopeful that'll be the case for vaccinations and treatments. But we also understand that every day we're seeing changes still, and we're all on the fly having to morph and change what we do in the face of this pandemic. So we're hopeful, but we also need to be sure that any of these treatments or tests, in fact, are actually safe and in the best interest of our patients.
What's your stand on hydroxychloroquine?
Unless it's in an investigational study, really is not recommended it be used. And that's a good example of, we all want to do things to help our patients, but we are also charged to do no harm, and we have to be careful on how we do these things.
You know, everybody's changing. You, as the president of the Mississippi Academy of Family Physicians, how have things changed across the state? Because I know that if you call now, it's what happened before the pandemic hit to what happens now is totally different. You go on the website, you take a look, and you'll find out a lot about, we got to get you cleared as far as COVID is concerned before you come in. So there has been massive changes.
Well, I think that you understand that we represent over 1,300 family physicians and residents and students across the state, and we've been in contact with many of these offices and physicians daily, at least several times a week through group communications, and all practices have changed, and the number of patients literally coming into the clinics has drastically dropped down to only 20% or less in some cases, some going to total telemedicine. All of this initially with the attempt to try to make patients safe and comply with the regulations and the guidelines. Now we're in a phase where there is more flexibility for all of us to get out, which means that we all have to be cognizant of and make good decisions for ourselves and our families and be careful. In the clinics, we want people to know as family physicians that we may be delivering care in different ways with telemedicine. You may see us and will see us with masks on and gloves and eye protection, when we see you and need to see you in the clinic, you will see that the clinics look more sterile, that the process of entering the clinic is a bit different. We really don't want patients in waiting rooms. We want to make sure that when Paul comes to the clinic that we've conversed with you over the phone, that we then move you straight back to a patient room for exam and actually have minimal contact with other employees and certainly with other patients in the clinic. We're going to have to continue to see patients in a manner that takes care of their chronic and immediate healthcare needs, but in a safe, responsible way. So I think you're right. This has changed greatly and all going to, going forward, see, I think, different mechanisms and processes. Individual clinics are working on this. We're working on this through committees with MAFP, with our other state agencies, such as the Mississippi State Medical Association, with hospitals and the Hospital Association. And I would point out that that has been one interesting thing that's happened in this process, is that you've seen all the disciplines of medicine, I think, come together. And we've been meeting regularly through whether it's Zoom meetings or however virtually, to all talk about how we can safely provide care to Mississippians, but also to protect our physician workforce and our staffs. Mm-hmm. And that's the one thing that I think that we have done thus far very well, is to try to make sure that we didn't exceed the capacity of our system. And I'm very thankful for that, or our financial situation.
I do want to ask you this, though, because I know in talking with our friend over at Georgia Blue, he has a concept, and I think they've done everything they possibly could and gone beyond the pill to protect their staff and also their customer base. But I like the concept of just waiting in your car instead of the waiting room, and that's a concept that he put forth there. And I thought, with the technology that we have, that should be easily implemented. And I think for medical centers and for you going to a clinic, it's even a better idea. Stay in the vehicle. We will call you with a technology or just come out and wave at you. You put a number on the dashboard or something, whichever way you want to do it. Has that been tried, or is that part of what you guys are doing?
Oh, yes. And we've heard of practices that are even doing things such as considering using the little pagers restaurants have used at times. I think a better way to do that is to actually have and we're working on this in my own practice, is to try to be sure we can have a virtual waiting room that's integrated with our electronic health record, and so that when you're in your car, it's very easy to then message via text or make a phone call to the patient. And that's what I was alluding to earlier. We don't want patients sitting in a waiting room.
Yeah, I agree with you. I never thought about that. That's kicking up another notch. Go on and take all the formalities, all the information on a virtual conferencing while you're in the vehicle. That's a great idea. So then when they call you, you can go from there right into the waiting room or into the office or the room. It's a great idea. I got to ask you about this. There's a story on the New York Times, and the worst thing that we've ever had in a crisis like this are people who want to make it political. So you don't really know what to believe and what not to believe these days. New York Times running a story, we learn more about the children and the COVID-19. New research is reshaping some of the thinking. It continues to be true that children as a group have been relatively spared, but there is evidence that some may become very sick. And we're beginning to learn more about the ways of the risk of this. Past week, there were reports of children hospitalized in different locations. New York City, multi-system inflammatory disease. A multi-system inflammatory disease. It's killed 3 children. Well, we are 325 million people in this country, and that's 3. But are we concerned about that, or what's your thoughts on this?
Well, we're always concerned about any death, and we're always concerned about new developments that happen, particularly with a relatively unknown virus. Mm-hmm. And that's been the problem with this virus. There is this disease that resembles Kawasaki that's being described. There have at least been 2 or 3 children hospitalized to date, or that was the last data I was given, in Mississippi. And this may happen even up to weeks following the infectious, the initial infection. So it's still being studied. It's still being looked at, whether it's really related to COVID or are there other possibilities there still needs to be worked out.
What are some of the symptoms?
A prolonged fever, a blotchy or a pale looking rash, there may be abdominal pain, some breathing difficulties, rapid heart rate, supportive care, unfortunately, is about all that you can do, but there have been deaths with this stuff.
Okay, I want to ask you a couple of other things. Can you hold on for a second? The most important thing on that one is that, is this contagious? And we'll talk about that when we return with Dr. Bill Grantham, president of Mississippi Academy of Family Physicians, and that is about more next. If you want more information, go to on the Twitter account at MSFamilyDocs, D-O-C-S. It's all there. Back with more coming up next. President of Mississippi Academy of Family Physicians, it is Dr. Bill Grantham. Just a couple more questions here. You mentioned this Kawasaki disease, and there were three in Mississippi. What were the ages? Could you remember that?
I was not given the ages, Paul. I think there were two or three that were hospitalized at UMC. And it's not Kawasaki. It's similar to that in some way.
Okay. And it's a respiratory disease, and you said something, and I couldn't hear you, and some of the audience were asking me to repeat that. Some of the symptoms.
Well, prolonged fever, a splotchy rash, there may be some abdominal pain, a rapid heart rate, and this tends to come, as I understand it, you know, sometime even up to weeks following a COVID infection. But it is still having to be looked at to see, is it really COVID, is it not? And I think before break, we asked about contagiousness with it. I think it's a thing that happens following the infection, a new infection per se. It's almost a hyper immune response to the disease is what it is felt.
And we only have three in the state of Mississippi, as far as you know, right now. Have you treated patients with COVID?
I think all of us have treated people that we didn't know had it. Personally, with all my responsibilities, I've not been in our testing clinic. We've actually set up clinics to try to evaluate the acute respiratory people and keep other clinics safe. So we've sort of delegated that, in part was to help preserve PPE, which has been a real issue. And that's part of what you've had to see with family physicians and us in primary care on the front lines. You mentioned earlier, adapting practice. We've had to do that, whether it is having acute respiratory clinics, smaller clinics, segregating a part of their clinic, or even doing curbside visits to home health and home visits for patients, trying in this pandemic to keep patients and staff safe and preserve PPE.
Well, it's a changing industry as far as family physicians are concerned, with telemedicine, with everything else going on, with the nurse practitioner issue out there, with rural places. And I do worry that the rural areas of our state, that we may not have family physicians in the future.
Well, we need family physicians, and as you well know,
badly.
The Rural Physician Scholars Program and the Office of Physician Workforce we implemented over the last number of years, and we're reaping those benefits now, or had been, and I think we will continue to do so. This pandemic, though, has financially affected many of these practices, and every practice, but many to the point they're having to contemplate whether they can stay open. So hopefully we've been advocates in trying to get information out, how to apply for the loans that are available and any grant money, and we'll continue to do so. Even the adapting to telemedicine has been actually amazing, the things that have happened. We weren't, most of us, doing telemedicine nearly to the degree that we're doing it now. And fortunately, through being advocates to CMS and through Senator Hyde Smith's office, who has helped us greatly, we've been able to deregulate some things that allow us to have technology that we can work with. Although I heard you mentioning earlier that we do need to work better on our infrastructure. We still need better bandwidth. We still need better connectivity. Yeah. And you're right that this will be a part of daily life for not only medicine, but many other things, but medicine in particular.
I do want to ask you this, and I think sounds like somebody slapping your microphone every once in a while, and some gremlins around there. But I do want to ask you this as a final question here. For all of those parents out there who are trying to mitigate this new territory, the kid gets a rash, we know it's not, or a cut or something like that. They need to call their family physician. What do you want them to know, no matter where they are across the state?
I want them to know that they should call, and we can help, whether it's through telemedicine or depending on the symptoms, decide whether they need to safely come in the clinic, and we'll make the clinic safe for them to do so. And then when they get there, that things may look different, things are different, but it's the same caring people there who've been there before, and we're interested in continuing to deliver that care.
The change is going to be more importance on that initial call. The call and find out exactly what you need to do. So it's more important that you just can't show up anymore at a clinic. And that's a thing of the past.
I think certainly in the short term and probably for quite a long time, that's going to be the appropriate way to do it is to set it up before you come, and I believe we will work out the efficiencies, and it'll be more efficient as well.
I like the idea of waiting in the vehicle anyway better than the waiting room, because number one, nobody wants to read the magazines anymore. I don't want to be sitting next to anybody who's sitting there coughing and the nose is running. I would rather wait in the confines of a truck or my car or a bulldozer before having to go sit in a waiting room. So I think it's a good idea. Guys, thank you so very much. I appreciate it. Dr. Bill Grantham, thank you for taking the time, sir.
Thank you, Paul. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right, Perez, we march on, sir, and we've got